I really think I should be putting on the voice of Vincent Price here. So why not? Hello, this is Ewan Spence here, and welcome to Insight number 67. I am in control of the next half hour, and joining me on this delightful voyage of horror, Rafe Blanford!
Hello, everybody.
Rafe, how are you feeling that you're giving me the chair again?
A little nervous, but I'm sure we'll muddle through.
I'm sure we will. Also joining us, Steve Litchfield.
Hello, I am here, but in my normal voice.
In your normal, Steve, has it been a good week for you?
It's been a very hectic week, like you, Ewan. I've got small kids, and we're in school holidays for people who are listening from overseas. In school holidays in the UK, which means absolute chaos.
Okay. And Rafe, how's your week been?
It's been absolutely spiffing, Ewan.
Absolutely spiffing. That's great. Lashings of marmalade and jammy Dodgers and cold tea down by the river.
Spot on.
Perfectly. Yes. Well, it's been an interesting week all round in the world of Symbian and smartphones as a whole. We're going to rattle through some of those points from the last week with our veritable points of discussion and diatribe. You're always welcome to leave your comments back on our website. As always, www.allaboutsymbian.com. Looking down the show notes, it's been a good week for pretty much everyone speaking. But at first glance, Nokia's Q1 results actually looked quite dire. But once you start taking away from the headline figures from some websites, when you start looking at the numbers, Rafe, I know you obviously were reveling in the elements of numbers and stats and everything. Tell us why Nokia's figures were actually really good for the industry.
Let's not get away from this. The results aren't good, but you have to understand them within the context of the current economic environment. The big headline that everyone's talking about is the 122 million euros profit, and that's down from 1.2 billion euros Q1 last year. That's at 90% fall year on year. However, there was an optimism amongst sort of share traders and analysts, and that's partly a result of the fact that the results weren't worse than they were expecting. They're around expectations. The fall in profits was probably bigger than they're expecting, but if you look at some of the other factors such as gross margins, which for the devices and service division was steady quarter on quarter at 33%. So there's sort of cause for overall optimism, especially when you consider in the light of some of the other mobile manufacturers. You know, Sony Ericsson has recently released a pretty disastrous set of results. And looking at the share price, that was up about 8% yesterday. So there's a feeling of optimism. And it was also Nokia talking about the industry outlook, where they were talking about destocking and the effect that had, but also looking into the second half of the year, they saw cause for optimism. They would see their own share increasing and sort of sales starting to recover. But let's not get away from the fact, it's still very difficult at times, and OPK, described it as unprecedented and exceptionally tough environment. If we look specifically at the sort of Symbian side of things in terms of device shipments, the converged devices, which is what Nokia refers to as smartphone or S60 sales, with 13.7 million. Now, that's still market leading, obviously. But that's down from 14.6 million in Q1 2008. And the concern is there that the smartphones is one of the few growth areas at the moment for the mobile industry. And so not growing is a cause for concern for Nokia. I wouldn't get that serious about it, because the previous quarter, Q4 2008, was 15.1 million. And usually would expect a seasonal decline of about that. So it suggests that Nokia is starting to hold steady. Certainly in terms of the optimistic news, they were pointing to E-series device sales, which were 3.3 million. That's the highest they've been ever on a quarterly basis. And they also pointed out the 5800, which sold 2.6 million units in the quarter. Now, that's a fantastic number, and they also said they're selling them now at the rate of 1 million a month. However, mixed in with that is sort of some bad news for N-series. That's dropped down to, I think it was 5 million, and that's compared to 11 million last year. Now, some of that is about the economic environment, and some of that is about the sort of 5800 perhaps cannibalizing N-series sales. That's something we could talk about. But the initial reaction when you see a 90% decline in profits is one of absolute horror. But you have to understand it in the context of the economic conditions. And Nokia were being very bullish about their portfolio going forwards in terms of sort of QWERTY devices and touch devices. And what you need to remember is it's actually not just about smartphones here. It's about Nokia's whole product. And they think that they're now going to face less competition, for example, in the low price markets for low cost handsets, because they feel their competitors have been cutting their prices in an unsustainable way, either by meaning they're not making any profit on them or they're sort of getting rid of stock. So, you know, yes, definitely bad results, but you have to understand them in their context.
One of the interesting things that I saw in the numbers, and it's a subject that we've brought up many times on the podcast, is the sales in North America. And the year-on-year change is actually 30% up. In fact, 30.8% to be precise. So what do you think has caused that? Because we've always talked, Rafe, about the American market, Nokia trying to get a foothold. Is this just the 5800, or are there other forces at work here?
I think you have to probably bear in mind the overall numbers here. You know, it's, 2.6 million in Q1 2008, up to 3.4 million. So to get a 30% rise, you don't actually need to sell that many more handsets. And this is a case of some of Nokia's cheap handsets coming in on the Verizon and I think Sprint as well networks, the sort of CDMA phones, the sort of basic $20-$30 phones rather than anything at the high end. There's a small impact maybe from some of their direct sort of SIM-free sales on the N series and other devices, but this is basically down to some of the deals they've managed to do with operators in the last year. We'll may see a bit more of an impact now with something like the E71X going forward, but yes, for the time being, it's really just down to sort of cheap pay-as-you-go devices rather than anything else, at least for the American market.
And that's certainly reflected all over, with the average device selling price down from €71 to €65. Now, when we look at the prices like the N97, we're expecting €400-600. That really does put into sharp contrast the difference between the high-end low-volume and the high-volume low-price, and the sort of Nokia living in both worlds, whereas people like BlackBerry and certainly Apple only live in that high-end world.
Yeah, that's right. And this is, you know, it's often easy to forget this when sort of looking at the Nokia stuff, and I'd actually make the argument that Nokia is fairly weak in the high-end devices, and the N97 will obviously go some way to helping with that, but you need a sustained strategy obviously. But in recent years we've seen a lot more smartphones come, you know, as you say, Ring, BlackBerry, the Apple as well, but also companies like HTC pushing the Windows Mobile and the Android devices, and so Nokia's faced a lot more competition there. Where it's facing less competition, at least at the moment, is sort of smartphones in the mid-tier space. And that's devices like the 5800 or the E63. And even more so, it's economies of scale tell on the very cheap devices, you know, the sub $10 or the, well, sub $30 handsets. And those are still the sort of bread and butter in terms of device numbers. Of course, the margins on those devices do tend to be smaller, which is why there's the interest in the high end, quite apart from it being sort of an aspirational thing.
Let's bring Steve in here, and Rafe and I have already mentioned the N97 and the issues that are surrounding that. Are we using this as some sort of holy grail? Because everything that you read online is, oh, the N97 will help with the high end, the N97 will help with the smartphone and perception, the N97, the N97, the N97. Are they setting themselves up for a fall here?
Well, yes and no. Nokia have stated publicly that they plan to sell, or hope to sell, 1 million N97s per month, which I think might be a tiny bit optimistic. It's not entirely clear exactly what's under the hood of the N97 until the early adopters and geeks that get their sweaty hands on it. We won't really know how much it'll set people's hearts afire in the world that we inhabit. There's also the fact that it's coming out so many months after being announced, and it's going to be right in the middle, bang in the middle of the Palm Pre in America, and I'm sure that will leak its way out across the world. The new iPhone 2 or iPhone 3 or whatever it would be called, that will be appearing on the streets reasonably soon afterwards. So it's going to be a very crowded marketplace over the summer, going into the autumn, going into the peak Christmas season. I think the N97 will still do well. I just, like, something in the back of my mind tells me it's not going to do quite as well as a lot of people hope.
And Nokia also qualified it that we hope it will do a million a month if the networks price it correctly.
Yeah, well, it has apparently come down. I saw some news reports last week saying that Nokia have said it won't be quite as expensive as some people said it was going to be originally. So I think we're probably still looking at about £400+ SIM-free in the UK. Although, as ever with these things, this will be sold quite well on contract because there's very few people who are going to want to fork out the best part of £500 just on a new toy, unless they've got something else to sell, of course.
Yes, I mean, I think the important thing is to remember it is just one device, but it's clear that Nokia are putting quite a lot of hope on this. Just to come back to some of the stuff that Steve said, I mean, I agree with him about the under-the-hood stuff and we don't know, but I think it's probably going to disappoint some people here, but I don't really think that matters because to a certain extent those people are influential, but a lot of people are going to buy the N97 regardless because it brings together two very important trends that we've seen in the market, and that's the popularity of QWERTY-based devices and the popularity of touch devices. And there aren't very many devices that combine those two together. I think HTC's Touch Pro 2 is one of them. That's going to be retailing at something like $800, so maybe £500, £600 in the UK. And the N97, if it can undercut that even a little bit, you know, that starts looking very attractive to the networks. I think the other important thing to remember about things like the Apple iPhone 3 and also the Palm Pre is it's going to be very limited availability on operators. The Pre, for example, is only going to be available in the US. It's on a CDMA carrier. We will get GSM eventually, but the N97 will have a free run. With the iPhone 3, it's a similar thing. It will be probably just a single network. And even if it is more widely available, it may well end up costing more. And the N97 is going to be available in more markets more widely, so it'll have an advantage there. And I think when you look at some of the technology that's going to be in the N97 with the likes of the Obvious Store, you know, as I say, that combination of technologies, I think there's every chance that it can, fulfill Nokia's hopes for it. And as we know, a lot of the time, that the technical ability has very little to do with it. It's about the perception and the marketing. And more importantly than anything else, doing the right deals in the distribution channel with the operators or whoever else it happens to be to get those devices into the market in an attractive way. And, you know, signing up, you know, a couple of big operators will do more for the N97 than, you know, a basic advertising campaign or whether it has accelerated hardware. A certain element of the consumer audience is going to care about those, but I don't think those will make or break the device. Simply because, you know, we talk about all this processor stuff, but it really doesn't matter. It's about how good the device is. I mean, yes, of course, having stuff like accelerated hardware can make it better, but does it really make a difference for the majority of people at the end of the day? And if it doesn't, it doesn't really matter if it's not there or if it is there. It's what people think about the device. They don't care what the hardware is. They don't care what platform it runs on. It's whether they like it as a device, whether they enjoy using it. And the N97, I think, has enough, you know, bits and pieces in there to very easily compete with, you know, the Omnia HD, the Apple devices. And I think more than some of the recent Nokia N-series devices, it's got enough difference and appeal to it that will attract back some of the Nokia fans who've perhaps looked at something like the N96 or the N85 and said, it doesn't offer me enough. The N97 does, and it's got enough difference. And that sort of, as I say, the combination of touchscreen and QWERTY keyboard with all this stuff that Nokia usually offers with the N-series, plus some of the obvious services, does make for a pretty compelling mix.
It does make a compelling mix, but my worry, of course, is you've only got three bullet lines in your major stores like your Carrefour and warehouses and so on. So a lot of that might get lost, but I suspect that that is a debate that we're going to continue to have and will have near the launch. Speaking of launches, though, and Samsung's PC Studio. Steve's been having a little more in-depth look at this. And Steve, you've been pleasantly surprised with the issues that they have raised around firmware updates.
Well, I have to say this is unofficial. I'm sure Samsung won't mind me saying this, but a lot of us have been questioning where they've been going in terms of their support and services for their S60 devices. Their PC Studio, which has been shipping with Samsung S60 devices for the best part of a year now, is really showing its age. It's kind of a clone of an early version of Nokia PC Suite without some of the bells and whistles. And there was a basic firmware updater built into that. And it worked for a while until I asked Samsung why it wasn't working reliably, at which point they basically said, oops, we didn't realize that was turned on, and they turned it off. So that's officially not working. But what they have said unofficially is that there is a brand new a replacement for PC Studio that's in the works, and it will come with firmware updating very much at the center of it, and will work reliably. So people like me and people with the Innovate and in future people with the Omnia HD will be able to do Nokia software update style firmware updates without any issues, without any problems. And certainly, given the sort of beta status of some of the Samsung firmwares up to now, I think that will bring them right up to par with some of the Nokia handsets. So that's coming out in the future. Do watch this space. We're on fairly good terms with the people at Samsung UK and Samsung Worldwide. And as soon as we get any news of a new PC Studio or of new firmwares, we'll let you know via the front page.
Yeah, that's right, Steve. I actually saw part of this PC Studio, not the firmware updating stuff, running at MWC this year. And more than just sort of the firmware update stuff, which is, of course, great news, particularly to power users, it's going to do a lot more in the way of sort of multimedia management in terms of getting music, video and that kind of thing onto your phone, as well as doing editing. And I think the version I saw had a very nice looking UI and sort of feel to it. And I think if Samsung get this right, they could perhaps even steal a march on Nokia by doing it in a different way. I think they'll both have their advantages and disadvantages. But if Samsung can sort of, especially with something like the Omnia HD, which is such a multimedia powerhouse, you know, we commented in the review, it's almost like a personal multimedia player device mixed in with a phone. If they can get that sort of, and you know, make it really easy to get stuff onto the phone, they could be onto a real winner there.
Well, there we go there. Speaking of real winners, Symbian Foundation is up and running, and it's doing a merry dance with its lovely jaunty logos, but also its involvement in the blogs and the social community, getting a dialogue going around the company. Two issues have popped up on their blogs, and we're going to address them both now. Let's start off with that proof of concept running on the Intel Atom chip. Rafe, I'm going to throw this one over to you. Of course, the Intel Atom CPUs, what famously are driving the new generation of netbooks, and there's always constant rumors that Nokia are going to move into this market in the Christmas, and there is always the well, what are you going to run on it? You're going to run Windows, you're going to run MAMO, but now does this give them another option in this mythical Nokia netbook, or is there something more at the heart of doing separate chipset sets on mobile phones?
I don't really think this is about the Nokia netbook. You know, if it was, I think the project would be further advanced. I suspect what Nokia will be doing in the netbook front, if they do anything at all, which is, you know, open to debate, is to, you know, take a sort of an ODM product and sort of put the Nokia logo on it and sort of offer it as the kind of the two-box solution as an interim gap until their own take on this particular part of the market comes out. And if you want me to put money on it, I'd say they're sort of probably looking at devices smaller than the current netbooks, but bigger than phones, and they'll probably be looking to run MAMO on it, but there's a lot of that remains to be seen. I think the significance here really is it's, you know, showing how Symbian is in the foundation is being more open in the way it works and showing the maturity of its platform and being able to do a port like this. It's really a proof of concept, but demonstrates that you could run Symbian OS on many more devices outside the mobile phone arena. You know, Symbian's actually been capable of running on x86, which is obviously the Intel architecture, for a long time, but all the phones we've seen run on the ARM architecture. But there are some advantages to the Intel architecture, basically offering a bit of flexibility and choice. And so if we think about some of the appliance-like devices, which I think I would tip to become more popular in the next few years, and these are the ideas, sort of fridge computers, you know, maybe in-car systems or kitchen computers. This is where Symbian OS can maybe look to expand their involvement into new areas, and I think that's more what this is about, and also kind of a demonstration of Symbian Foundation's new ethos about being open and talking about possibilities, and, you know, throwing this out there and see what happens.
Let me introduce the next item, Ewan, if I may. Just this year, Symbian on their Symbian Foundation blog have been asking people, rather in a novel way, what they should call their own show, and various sites have reported this as Symbian losing their identity. But I think it's more a symptom of the Symbian Foundation wanting to be seen to be absolutely open to suggestions, to involvement from the community. So in past years, we've been through things like the Scion Developer Expo. In recent years, it's been the Symbian Smartphone Show. My suggestion to Symbian would be just to simply call it the Symbian Foundation Show. It's important to keep the their new name high profile. I think Symbian Foundation has a certain ring to it and really parallels things like the LIMO Foundation in terms of being a totally open OS. So I would say they suggest make it the Symbian Foundation Show and keep the general themes of the show much as they have in previous years in terms of developer tracks and overall strategy tracks. What's your view on this, Rafe?
Yes, I'm inclined to agree with you, Steve. I think, the important thing is really it should be a promotional opportunity for Symbian Foundation. I think the important thing to get across really is the degree of change which Symbian has gone through. The open source project that they're now undertaking is really a massive undertaking, and I don't think it's necessarily been fully appreciated. And so I would be looking to use the first show to kind of communicate that and to communicate the new ethos in terms of, the openness, the willingness to have a conversation, to try and, a group effort, if you like, to, with the community involved. It's very easy to be cynical about this kind of approach, but I don't think, we should underestimate the scale of the project in turning Symbian OS open source and then continuing to develop it. Moreover, that is, what they're trying to do in their business as well, trying to have a flat organization. There's all these negativities about design by committee or consensus building. And yes, it's easy to get bogged down in that, but, perhaps celebrate the fact they're trying to do something different, which could be, a very radical business model that in the future could become a case study. And so looking at the show in particular, yes, I'd favour sort of promoting the Symbian Foundation. I think actually more to the point is thinking about the content within the show. I think in the past it's kind of been a multi-headed hydra, the smartphone show. Does it appeal to developers? Should it appeal to consumers? I actually think there's no point appealing to consumers, because what the Symbian Foundation is doing is about creating the software platform and the community to build the phones. People don't really care where that comes from. They care about actually using their phones. And so I think having the appeal to the consumers doesn't matter. But I'd like to see, perhaps introduce some of the ideas from the open source world, from unconferences perhaps, not necessarily doing everything like that. It's important to still have the training and the keynotes and the shows, but, bring in some of the application demos, bring them a bit further in, try and generate conversation and discussion. That's to me what's important. And yes, the Symbian Foundation show is as good as any. I think Symbian Open has been mentioned on the blog as well. I quite like that. Of course, there's also, there has to be a certain amount of, well, there's nothing wrong with the Symbian smartphone show in one sense, although personally I'd be keen to get away from the word smartphone, because I think that can be a bit limiting. But I'd be interested in, I know you, Steve, have attended the show for the last 3 or 4 years or longer, actually, I think.
the last 12.
Last 12 years, yeah. So, yes, the memory plays tricks on you. They sort of meld together. But, I mean, I'd be interested to see what you think, what sort of content you think should be in this sort of thing.
I think the current content for the last few years has been about right, like you say, with a heavy emphasis on the ecosystem. I think one point to make is that you say it shouldn't really appeal to consumers, and I would agree with that, but the people who get in for free on the day, the people who come along, they don't tend to be your average phone buyer from the high street. They don't tend to be your average buyer from who knows where. They tend to be the early adopters and bloggers, the people that you've probably heard their names mentioned on All About Symbian in the past. That's these, say, 200 or 300 people who come along each year who have no specific interest in the actual ecosystem and developing. They're simply there because they want to see what's the latest and greatest hardware, the latest and greatest software, and they tend to be people like us who then go away and write about it. So, yes, it doesn't appeal to consumers, but I think it still very much does appeal to early adopters and bloggers, and as usual, I suspect that we'll have a high old time meeting up and comparing notes. It's also worth mentioning that that if people who haven't seen the site, that it has been confirmed now by Symbian Foundation that it's 27th to 28th of October 2009. Last year we didn't get an All About Symbian, a proper All About Symbian meet-in beforehand. I'm hoping that does happen this year. We've got about a room full of door prizes to give away, if nothing else. It's also at Earls Court too, because there's been loads of positive feedback saying it's a much better venue than the Excel Centre. So I for one, am very much looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, I agree, Steve. Yeah, you're quite right. There's an opportunity there to sort of appeal to, if you like, word of mouth, social media. Use that to try and get the Symbian Foundation name out there a bit more, which can only help. And yes, I'm glad to see it's coming back to Earl's Court as well. It certainly beats being out in the Docklands. And as you were saying, you know, it's with that dating in October, there should be a considerable bit further down the road of the Symbian Foundation. I would imagine the first release would have been coming out. We'll probably even be talking about the second release by that time. And we'll, you know, be seeing that, you know, more handsets, which are actually Symbian Foundation handsets. So I think it'll be an exciting time, because at the moment there's still a fair amount of uncertainty, and, you know, Symbian Foundation, it's finding its feet, and that will, you know, whatever it ends up being called, the show will be its big coming out party in one sense, when it's actually the Symbian Foundation as opposed to the transition period, which it was at last year's show and at MWC this year. So yes, definitely looking forward to it. And the one thing we can guarantee is that All About Symbian will be there in force to bring you all the news and everything you need to know.
Yeah, absolutely. As was also discussion in our back channel here on the podcast about the public prominence of the name Symbian or the Symbian Foundation and where that should go. I have to say, Rafe very kindly lent me his T-Mobile G1, a device which I'd have played with in the past, but never had here for long term. And it just struck me on the back that Google have their logo. It's not prominent on the back. It's just tastefully decorated so that people who look on the back and look closely, they'll see the Google name and, of course, will recognize the Google name. Of course, if you put Symbian Foundation on the back of a phone, they won't really recognize that in the same way. But I think that the Symbian Foundation should try an angle and persuade manufacturers to go with that kind of level of prominence. Nothing on the front of the device, just something tasteful and small on the back, along the lines of, you know, DivX included, Google included, etc., etc., so that the Symbian Foundation name does get there subliminally into people's consciousness.
That's an interesting one, Steve. I mean, do you think that sort of thing matters? I mean, with Google, clearly there's co-branding possibilities because they already know the Google name. But, you know, that's on the HTC Android devices. Do you think we'll see some of the big manufacturers, you know, have the same sort of inclusion of Android on their and the Google logo on their name? I mean, I know, for example, one thing with Android, that if you deviate from the standard Google package, for example, if you put it on your own soft keyboard, you can no longer use the Google logo. And so it comes and goes there. I mean, does it really matter that people know their phone is running on the Symbian Foundation? Aren't sort of the services and things like that going to be more important for the average person? I mean, you know, even in something like the sort of PC space, yes, people know it's running Windows, but do they always know what version it is? I mean, sure, in the tech crowd, yes, that's important. I just can't really get excited about needing to have the name of the OS on the phone itself.
Yeah, that's a fair point, but I've been hoping all these years that the people will actually realise, people down in the real world will realise the advantages of owning a device that's part of a platform, part of a device that belongs to a particular operating system. They don't need to know any of the details of the operating system, just the fact that, hey, it's Symbian, or hey, it's Windows Mobile, or hey, it's iPhone, or hey, it's Android. And because it is of that variety, because it runs that OS, then it is compatible with the various things they've heard about. And if they then go onto a services site, a Web 2.0 site, and it said compatible with Symbian or compatible with Windows Mobile, they'll then think, okay, that's me. So I know it's not essential to have a Symbian Foundation logo on the back of each device, but I just think it would be really a good idea. Nothing garish, just something subtle so that people who need to know, want to know, which operating system their device runs, if they don't know already, they'll think, okay, it's Symbian Foundation, or okay, it's iPhone, okay, it's I guess iPhone's obvious, but hey, it's Google, it's Windows Mobile. I just think after all these years of trying to raise the profile of Symbian and the operating system and the platform in people's eyes, I think now is probably not the time to do away with it completely, and something subtle would be a good idea.
No, there's certainly a point to be made there. I mean, perhaps if you can't get it onto the device itself, put it on the box in a reasonably good position, and that will do that job as well. But yes, I think this is a debate we're going to have for a while to come, because, you know, Windows Mobile, that's obviously one strategy. It's been pretty successful for Microsoft in one sense, and certainly people associate the Apple, you know, it's single manufacturer there, but, you know, it's the Apple OS on their phone. So yeah, I mean, I certainly, it's a debate that goes both ways, and I suspect it's one we'll come back to.
Yeah, and of course the fact that that Nokia really has a heavy say in exactly what happens with the Symbian Foundation in terms of branding, I suspect. So it may entirely be up to them. But
Right. Ultimately, it's down to the manufacturers who use the Symbian Foundation software. I think the probably the realistic thing is they'll be reluctant to dilute or have another brand on their own devices. And at the end of the day, if we look at Nokia or Sony Ericsson or Samsung, their actual hardware brand is far more prominent than anything else, and people don't buy, you know, devices for a particular operating system, whatever we might like in one sense, because it would be good. They buy it because they want a Nokia or the latest nice looking device, and so maybe it's all a moot point.
I just want to get them trained. And I'm flogging a dead horse, I know.
Brainwashing.
Okay, back to you, Ewan.
Well, my pretties, it's very lovely that I'm still here, isn't it? Well, it's a goodbye from Mr. Spence and a goodbye from Mr. Litchfield.
Goodbye. See you next week.
Goodbye from Mr. Blandford.
Goodbye, everyone.
And a goodbye from me. Thank you very much for listening. Your All About Symbian podcast comments are always welcome. www.allaboutsymbian.com. You